Hey, this is Colin, back with the Busby Bay podcast, and I'm joined today by a new guest host, Philip Stoner. How's it going, Phil?
Pretty good.
Yeah, we're back to 4-0 FC. Manchester United 4-0 victors over Chelsea in opening weekend. Marcus Rashford hitting one from the penalty spot for a second half flurry of goals from Martial, Rashford, and then Daniel James' debut goal in front of the Stretford end.
I'd love to see that. That was awesome.
Yeah. That was good. How do you feel about the opening weekend overall?
Really optimistic. I mean, I felt good about our back four and keeping De Gea coming into this game. But it was just good to see, like, some of our midfield play. I mean, I think we struggled at times, but...
Yeah, it was pretty evident in that first half. It seemed like maybe there was, I don't know, if chemistry issues or they just weren't pressing on the same page, but Pogba and McTominay really settled in the second half.
Yeah, for sure. And I think that we just got confidence too. Like, obviously our two first half goals were mistakes by Chelsea, but I think it really helped us.
One first half goal.
Wow.
The penalty.
Well, the other one was also a mistake.
We only scored one goal in the first half.
Uh-oh. For some reason, I thought we scored two goals in the first half. That was definitely a mistake. And then we came out second half and we looked much better. I don't know what Ollie told them over halftime, but it worked. It definitely worked.
Yeah, it seemed like they'd made some sort of a change in the midfield where McTominay was more of a patrolling duty and Pogba was, you know, definitely had his head up and looking for through balls to find Martial or Rashford.
Yeah, for sure. And Pogba looked so much better second half. I felt like first half, and it could have just been, I guess, nerves about this being his first game in United after all these rumors about him leaving. I don't know, but he looked shaky. He was on the ball too much. He gave the ball away, dribbled too much. But he looked great second half. And that pass to Rashford was amazing. That was beautiful.
I guess that sort of just comes with Pogba's game, though, the risk that he's going to turn the ball over because he likes to, he's kind of the point guard when he's on the ball and United are in possession. But that sort of telepathic connection that he has with Rashford on that, the third goal was right after the Martial goal.
Certainly not the first time we've seen that from Pogba and Rashford. They've done that a lot.
That happened with Leicester and Tottenham last season. And it seems like with this attack more focused on not just counterattacking, but also the speed of all the attackers on the front line, that's really going to be useful going forward.
And I think we actually do have really good speed up front. Like, I even thought Andrus played pretty well at times.
Yeah, he is another player who struggled in the first half, but he was the player that assisted Martial's goal.
Yeah. And again, I don't know if that was also nerves of him, like, realizing he had to play well to solidify that spot in the squad or what. But yeah, he definitely looked shaky, but he settled in. I would hate to see more of him, but I definitely don't think he's my first choice at that position.
It was kind of weird seeing him and Lingard kind of interchangeable between right wing and attacking midfield. I kind of expected whoever played at number 10 to be there the entire match, being sort of the distributor, but that's what we saw in the preseason. Right. I guess, you know, it's preseason, but still. You want to give your standout player or players of the...
Well, I think there were a number of them, for sure. And I think Pogba's second half definitely stood out to me. Harry Maguire, can't really overstate what he did. Not only just, like, being there. I feel like every time the ball was in the air, Harry Maguire was there. I don't care where it was on the pitch. And maybe that was obviously, like, confirmation bias because I expected to see that. But it really, he just did not disappoint at all. And I feel like he installed a lot of confidence in that back four. I feel like Lindelof played better because he was there. And Wan-Bissaka has been amazing all preseason, and he just was still playing great.
Yeah, I was going to say the two big signings, Wan-Bissaka and Maguire, really looked – I mean, it was patching over two major holes in the squad.
Oh, yeah.
We had one of the worst defensive seasons last year that we've had in the entire Premier League history of Manchester United. And both of them looked really confident and comfortable.
Yeah, for sure. And I feel like Harry Maguire, you could even see it on set pieces. He already settled in as a leader of that back four. Because he knows what he's doing, and he knows why he was brought here. He's not intimidated by that transfer fee, you know, the most expensive defender. I think he loves that, like, because he knows he's good. And he was ready to take that responsibility from day one. And I love to see that. That was awesome.
One thing I was talking about on Rooney Rewind with Paul Ansorge was that sort of confidence that you get from being told you're good enough at Manchester United. It's not just with Sir Alex Ferguson, but with Ole now, he's putting a lot of trust in younger players, and they seem to be thriving with it.
Yeah, no, I mean, our starting 11 was the youngest of the opening weekend, which I actually love to see that, because I do feel like, especially since Sir Alex retired, we've been investing a lot in experienced players, which is generally a pretty good investment, but it hasn't worked out too much.
Yep.
And so I like to see some of our youth getting a chance and buying younger players, like Juan Bissaka. He's still pretty young.
Yeah, he and Daniel James, both 21. McGuire, 26, but that's still, you know, he should be in his prime at this point.
And yeah, for
he's
sure.
got at least 5-6 years, ideally.
Yeah.
I guess my standout player would probably be Marcus Rashford. Just the confidence in taking that penalty. I thought it was interesting that he is the designated penalty taker
now. Well, because Pogba's run-up looks awful.
Yeah, but he scored, five or six last season?
Total. I mean, it works, Rashford is definitely more appealing to watch from the penalty
spot. More power. But he knows exactly where he wants to put it. He doesn't doubt himself. I think it says a lot about his mentality evolving from the player that he was 3-4 years ago when we first saw him. And it's easy to forget he's still 21 years old, too. So that's, I mean, 3 or 4 players that were in the starting lineup were 21.
Yeah.
I think we had 5 starters that were graduates from the Manchester United Academy as well.
See, I love to see that, too. Big. And I actually do routinely forget Rashford is 21. I feel like he's played a lot of first-team games. He's been good in a lot of first-team games. He shows a lot of composure. I forget that he's that young.
And same with Anthony Martial, who I was going to say wasn't really a standout player, but I think he's shown a lot of growth, I guess, because he's going to have to play a totally new role. Maybe not totally new, because he played that his first season at Manchester United, but that number 9 role is very different from the left winger role, which he looked really isolated at times when he played there in the past couple of seasons. But he looks deserving of the number 9 shirt again.
Yeah, at least at this point. And I think he was shaky at times too, but that is a brand new position to him, well, at least recently.
Yeah.
Like, he's being reinstalled there.
But at the very least, it's new with the system that he's playing, because when he played there under Louis van Gaal, it wasn't like they were, you know, full speed counterattacking team.
Yeah, for sure. And the goal he scored, he was in great position. Mm-hmm. He got in front of his defender, bodied him out, and it may have looked like a simple goal, but there was a lot of build up that he did really well to get in that position to make that goal.
Yeah. And of course, I guess we can't really talk about like just that goal, but also the whole game without kind of mentioning that this was not a very strong Chelsea team.
Nope, it was not. although they did look much better in the Super Cup against Liverpool.
Oh, yeah, that the Super Cup happened today. And, of course, a 2-2 draw after extra time, and then they lost on penalties to Liverpool. But still, they're kind of like us in that they're relying a lot on youth, but that's more out of, you know, they have a transfer ban.
Yeah, certainly not a good Chelsea team.
Yeah.
But I liked to see them hanging in there with Liverpool in the Super Cup, because I think it makes our victory over them look even a little better.
Yeah.
But, I mean, they're not a good team. That's very clear.
Yeah, a lot of players still need a lot of experience. Mason Mount, Tammy Abraham, Christian Pulisic even. I mean, he's played in Bundesliga for 3 years now, but he's not exactly been the guy at Dortmund. You know, He still has a lot to do, a lot of growing to do at Chelsea. And as Americans, you know, we want to see it happen, but maybe not Chelsea win so much. But.
Right. Actually, I'd be okay with him struggling until he goes somewhere else. But I think he assisted on one of the goals today.
Olivier Giroud.
So, I mean, he looks good. And there were times even against us that Chelsea looked pretty good. Like, there were just very clear breakdowns at times. Kurt Zuma had a couple like bonehead moments, and
he gave away the penalty, and then on the Martial goal, he kind of drifted a little bit further, left Christensen all alone with Martial, who also didn't have a great game either, Andres Christensen. But
yeah, and I think there is like a gelling thing to them as well. Like, they may be better later on, but I guess there's an asterisk against the. Aside the 4-0, because they're not great, and they're certainly not a cohesive unit yet.
Mm-hmm. But I do think it's worth mentioning that I think Frank Lampard deserves more than just one season there. You know, if they finish 7th, I don't think he deserves to be sacked. And I think it's a trend I'm liking maybe a bit more than, you know, what we've seen from United and Chelsea in the past few years of the revolving door managers. And actually on a segment coming up, I was a guest on the We Ain't Got No podcast of the We Ain't Got No History Chelsea page for SB Nation. And we had a pretty good conversation about that. So I won't go too far into it. But, it, you know, that's what we love about Ollie, is he's, you know, a club legend who's bringing back an attacking style of football. So maybe it will work out at Chelsea. Who knows?
You should definitely check that segment out. And that's a great podcast name. So that's fantastic.
Yeah. So I guess we can go ahead and do that now. We'll have a quick ad break. And then I'll put in that segment. And then afterwards, we'll come back and Phil and I will preview the Wolves game. So stay tuned.
Hi, welcome to the Busby Babe podcast. I'm Colin, and I'm joined by Rom and Jimmy from the We Ain't Got No History, We Ain't Got No Podcast, Chelsea SB Nation fan page. How you guys doing after this this glorious Sunday?
Getting better.
Oh, that's such a tricky question. Mixed feelings, I'll say it that way.
Yeah. This was a fixture that a lot of pundits pointed to as whoever lost it would be under a significant amount of pressure. But of course, it's only one game in a 38-game Premier League season. Do you think that Frank Lampard maybe is kind of on the hot seat already, or do you think that he'll get the sort of support that he needs from the Chelsea board for the rest of the season and going into next season?
Ooh. Ram, you want to start?
So right, I think we'll be fine. I think the board will give him time because we will be fine this season. Because, you know, when you looked at yesterday's performance and you really thought about why we lost, it was it was down to individual errors and the underlying numbers weren't so bad. We mostly got the ball into good areas. It's just down to our poor decision making in the end, and that'll improve as the team becomes more of a cohesive unit and our best players come back. So I think mostly we'll be okay. We'll probably get a top six finish, and then the board will say, okay, this is a process, and they will probably back him and let him stay for another year. But Jimmy, I don't know if you'll agree with that.
Well, normally I wouldn't, but the thing is that this is a season of firsts for Chelsea. I mean, we have had a transfer ban about 12 years ago, but that wasn't as harsh as it was now, due to us having just simply a much better squad and squad depth. Chelsea boards slash Abramovich, as you've mentioned, is or has been very trigger happy. So will they give Frank Lampard time? I wouldn't be as confident as Ram. Cause if we do end up being 16th or 17th, then I can still see them sacking him, unfortunately. And it will break my heart if they do that, but that's just the culture we're in nowadays. So I hope it won't happen and that I'm wrong, but you know, you never know. And regards whether Chelsea will have a good season, I hope so. You know, as Ram mentioned, we still have players that will be coming back. And that's actually, or those are the ones that Chelsea fans are currently putting all their hope in.
Yeah, and of course they do still have talent. I think, you know, last season we didn't really get to see a solid defensive midfield duo of Jorginho and N'Golo Kante. So, of course, that could still take off because as exposed as Jorginho has been at times in the Premier League, he's still a quality midfielder. And, of course, Mason Mount and Tammy Abraham both show a lot of promise. And I think Christian Pulisic was an important addition to the squad as well. Do you think that maybe he'll have more of a starting role? I guess that was one of the big conversations, is that he missed out on the starting 11 at Old Trafford.
Well, I mean, I think after Pedro played so poorly yesterday, and he really did, he was the worst Chelsea player on the pitch for me personally. I don't see how Frank Lampard can't, because Ross Barkley, that is something that we haven't been really mentioning, and you know, when we talked before as well, Ross Barkley on the wing was terrible. He's just not a winger. In the 10 position, he has played well in pre-season, but you could just see that that is not his preferred position. So if we do have two good wingers, that might change things, because we've been missing goals last season as this one started. So I hope that Christian Pulisic and the eventual return of Hudson-Odoi or Willian, who will be hopefully ready for Leicester City at the weekend, will be able to contribute that.
Yeah, I rate Callum Hudson-Odoi pretty highly. I was, in a way, glad that Frank Lampard got the job just to see more of him. Because, of course, there was that spat with Sarri where he wasn't sure if Hudson-Odoi was ready yet. But I've been really impressed with him both at Chelsea and the brief spells he's had with England. In terms of Frank Lampard again, maybe I'll turn off some of my Man United listeners on this one, but when I was I was a kid growing up as a Man United fan, I actually had two Frank Lampard jerseys, one from Chelsea and one from England, just because I enjoyed watching him that much, and he was one of my favorite players to watch. So again with Frank Lampard, and then you see it with Ole Gunnar Solskjaer as well, these two club legends are trusted with the future of these two teams that both have incredibly high expectations, particularly in the Premier League era. And they come in after this sort of era of revolving door managers, you know, coming in for a couple of years, either they're successful or, and then they fail, or they're not successful at all. Do you think that maybe this is sort of bucking that trend of, you know, the revolving door manager, and that they'll actually be trusted to build this? I know you guys answered that a little bit with Frank Lampard, but I guess in the case of Ole Gunnar Solskjaer, do you think that this is a huge step in the right direction for Manchester United, or do you think that this will just be more of the same?
Right. So I like to be optimistic in these matters because I'm a bit of an idealist, if I may. So I know how things are in football, and I know that the nature of the industry is really cutthroat now, and it's hard to build a quote-unquote dynasty, as you were. But I think that it's things move in cycles, and the cycle of Manchester United having their glory years with Sir Alex, and, well, Chelsea never really had a dynasty, but as things move in cycles, sometimes clubs need to, you know, take a step back and look at where they're headed, and they probably do need to bring in someone who can take care of things and someone who knows the club inside out for a few years. So me personally, I think that these two managers might surprise everyone. They might stay for longer than everyone expects because, you know, everyone is just mocking their appointments left, right, and center. Everyone who isn't a United and Chelsea fan. Mm-hmm. I've heard so many people talk about, the game as, you know, the derby of, like, I don't know, clueless clubs or whatever. Giving managers a chance just because they're the Premier League, I mean, they're club legends and all that. But yeah, as I said, due to the cyclic nature of things, I think that Solskjaer and Lampard will both, help the clubs into successful transitions. And we're both actually at similar points, similar crossroads with respect to transfers as well, because if Solskjaer is saying that he only wants to sign players who are, you know, a right fit for the team, because, I mean, Man United is obviously filthy rich, and given that they only signed that many players, there's a clear consideration that the club is making that they probably don't want to block pathways, and they want to add players who are only right fits for, I mean, in terms of characters and the, you know, the dressing room and everything. So I think that similar things are happening in both clubs, and that ultimately both managers will have more successful periods than, you know, people are projecting them to have right now.
Yeah, I think a trend that we're kind of seeing with the arrivals at Manchester United this summer, but also with the players that are coming up at Chelsea, is you see perhaps a lot more passion for playing for that club than you would see from some other transfers. I think a lot of United fans were really disappointed that the Paulo Dybala potential swap deal fell through. But part of the concern over that was whether Dybala actually wanted to play for Manchester United or not.
Exactly. I was thinking of that. Yeah.
And when you look at Harry Maguire and Daniel James and Aaron Wan-Bissaka celebrating yesterday, you know, it seemed like they'd been part of this team forever. You know, this was, I mean, Daniel James scoring at the Stratford End on his debut at Old Trafford is, you know, it doesn't get much better than that. And I, you know, Chelsea obviously didn't have a whole lot to celebrate, but I do think that now that their youth players are actually getting the chance, I think you'll see a lot of the same things from them with Mason Mount and Tammy Abraham and Christian Pulisic.
We'd have to score first to do that. but generally, I do hope that will happen. I think it's difficult because there are those youngsters that have that. But then on the other hand, there are those that are more interested in themselves and the money nowadays and social media. It's a very thin line. And from a Chelsea perspective, I don't know if you would agree with me there, Ram, but I'm sure that United fans might see it the same way. About 15 years ago, 20 years ago, that's where real passion was. I don't know that, the spine that we had 2005 with that double winning season of the Premier League, where United also had the likes of Giggs, Scholes. Those were people that were living for that club. And same was with John Terry, Frank Lampard. I mean, Lampard is back, but of course as a manager. That's something that's very hard to emulate nowadays. And I don't know if the players that we have, because, you know, Eden Hazard was a brilliant player, possibly the most technically gifted one we ever had. But he was never the kind of guy that I was seeing celebrating, you know, his heart out and Chelsea through and through. The same as I don't see that with Paul Pogba, for example.
Mm-hmm. Don't you?
I absolutely don't. And Romelu Lukaku, of course, just as much. You know, well, he's not there anymore, so of course. And it's the same with, for example, in this Chelsea squad with
Pardon, Willian?
I was going to say Willian, yes, for example. You know, that is...
I mean, you could obviously see it with people like Morata and... I mean, most obviously Morata.
Yeah, no, I mean, Courtois, also people that have already been here for a long time. And Willian, for example, isn't a person that I'd associate with being proper Chelsea. You know, I think that's the connotations that evokes is not good nowadays. But just being, you know, really enticed with the club, that isn't something I would attribute to, for example, Willian or Paul Pogba or... I don't know who's already been a long time at United. I mean, Nemanja Matic has been there for a few years now, but I wouldn't say he does that. Correct me if I'm wrong.
No, I think with Paul Pogba, you see it in streaks. But maintaining his, I guess, interest in or maintaining his consistency has been a really big problem of his at Manchester United, because he has those incredible moments like he did in the derby against Manchester City, where he single-handedly drug us back into the game. And then there are other times like against City last year, when he just was absent the entire game, despite being on the pitch 90 minutes.
And I think that's the point. So, sorry to interrupt you, but that's the point I'm trying to make. When things are going well nowadays, players are, you know, Man United or Chelsea, whatever. But when things aren't going well, they take off, or they don't care, or, you know, David Luiz is the most prominent example and most recent one for Chelsea. Everyone thought he was proper Chelsea. The only one who was, you know, in the squad of that Champions League final who won us that. And he just left. He didn't care. Oh, I'm not going to get a starting spot, bye. And only a few months ago, he was signing a contract saying he wants to stay at Chelsea for the rest of his career, about, you know, something along those lines. So I think loyalty is... not really a thing anymore in football today. And I'm pretty sure that that will be the same among youth players. Maybe this is too pessimistic. I'm sorry if I'm being very negative, but you know, it's just something I don't believe in anymore. That died with the likes of Giggs, Lampard, John Terry, and so on.
Yeah, I think, Ram, I'll let you add in on this as well next, but just very briefly, I think for people like us who grew up and lived through the era, you know, the late noughties of those great Chelsea and Man United teams, it's maybe it affects our perspective of that a little bit, because I do agree with you in terms of loyalty. It does seem like people won't necessarily die for the badge like Paul Scholes did, or like you could see it in Didier Drogba when he led them on that incredible run to the Champions League. That was completely driven by his will to win.
Yeah.
Win for the club. But I do think that, you know, when it those teams that achieve success so consistently, it's maybe a little bit difficult to see that same thing happening with you know, a team that'll finish sixth one season and then second the next.
I totally agree. As you heard, I mean, of course, Ram.
Yeah, I mean, it's hard to talk about those traits now. I'd probably agree in saying that, you know, the types of figures that we discussed, the ones that you just named, are nowhere near our squads right now. I mean, I'd say that, you know, of our remaining players, maybe I'd be loath to even call David Luiz one of them, you know, because not only just because of the reason he's left, but I've never really bought into his whole, you know, I'm a geezer act. So I think that, but I'd also like to tie that back into, you know, the point I was making, that these managers are here to see in a transition which also involves these clubs nurturing players who, you know, really bleed blue or bleed red, which everyone does. Sorry, bad joke. But yeah, I mean, the purpose of these so-called transitions are to, you know, to create leaders, to create these new characters, your new Ryan Giggs and Paul Scholes and our new Drogba's. And even though Drogba wasn't from Chelsea, he obviously had an undying will for the club, and that's nothing less than I expect for Ruben Loftus-Cheek or Mason Mount or Tammy Abraham or Callum Hudson-Odoi, who badly want to play for Chelsea FC, who get the club, right? And I'm sure that you have the corresponding figures at United as well, even if that's not Paul Pogba, even if it's Mason Greenwood or if it's Scott McTominay, who, I mean, you know, I've never been the biggest fan of Scott McTominay, but I wouldn't be surprised if he just grew into, you know, that Darren Fletcher or John O'Shea kind of player who just stuck with Man United for a really long time and eventually turned into like a big figure in the dressing room and stuff. So I think that where both clubs are on their way to getting those kind of figures back.
Yeah, I agree with that. I think with Manchester United, I think a lot of us feel that with Marcus Rashford and Anthony Martial, that, you know, they're willing to stick through it. But of course, we'll have to wait and see. Ram, Jimmy, thank you so much for joining us. And you want to go ahead and plug your podcast?
Yeah, so our podcast is called We Ain't Got No Podcast. It's the official podcast of We Ain't Got No History, of course. And you can follow the blog on Twitter at WAGNH_CFC. You can follow me on Twitter at, you know, just type my name, Ram Srinivas, into Twitter. My handle is too weird. It has a lot of repeating letters in it. So, yeah. And Jimmy, I'll let you speak for yourself.
Yeah. So, I like to give my own hot takes on Twitter under at Jimmy Funnel CFC. Would also be very appreciated if, the odd Man United supporter would, follow me. I do talk about non-Chelsea related matters as well, and I try not to be biased, as so many of us do.
And I will say, from my brief experience of following Jimmy on Twitter, that his takes on Pedro are a must read. So, Jimmy and Ram, thanks for joining us, and listeners, we'll see you next time.
All right, welcome back. This is Colin and Phil, still on the Busby Bay podcast. I hope you enjoyed that segment of the We Ain't Got No Podcast collaboration. And if you want to listen to a full episode of a conversation, including myself and editor of the Busby Bay, Brent Maximin, you can check out We Ain't Got No Podcast and follow them wherever you get your podcast. I think they're definitely on the Apple Store, but you can find them on Spotify in the coming weeks. I think they're working on that. It may be up already, though. Check it out. And you can listen to a full 40 to 50-minute conversation about the Chelsea-Man United game. But now, Phil and I are going to move on to the Wolverhampton Wanderers game next Monday. Wolves, of course, have a Europa League qualifying round tie on Thursday, but it is at the Molineux Stadium, so they won't have traveled to Armenia and then come back. It's not a huge trip for them, but it is a full game that they're having to play. And the potential of extra time as well.
Yeah, and I actually don't think we'll necessarily see all of their superstars or their star players, because they do have a 4-0 first leg aggregate, but and so they may be preparing for that Premier League match with us.
I said the potential of extra time, but really not. Yeah, it's a very small chance.
Yeah, I would be shocked if they allowed that to happen.
Yeah. But I mean, that just shows kind of how good they are. Is maybe they're not as deep as a lot of other Premier League teams. Obviously, they're still a 7th, 8th, 9th place team. But, you know, we're not the only big team that they gave trouble last year.
Oh, no, not at all. And I do think that this season they may struggle more just because of the increase in matches. Just playing in the Europa League is going to be tough for them, because that squad is not that deep and they're not used to playing this many games. But there were games last year where they looked fantastic. They actually had a tendency to play to their opponent a little bit. So they'd play really well against bigger teams and then lose to teams you wouldn't expect them to lose to.
Yeah, like in the FA Cup semifinal against Watford.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, they're similar to us in the sense that they're more of a counter-attacking team. They really like to not really park the bus, but sit deep in defense and then have their creative midfielders and their really quick forwards, you know, catch teams off guard on the break. Diogo Jota was a really good player for them last year. Raul Jimenez, who they had on loan, they've finalized a deal to keep him permanently at the club. And obviously Joao Moutinho and Ruben Neves also in midfield. You know, this is a team of really promising younger players that they managed to keep all together after a really good season. So maybe turning into something, but you know, who knows?
Yeah, I was actually kind of surprised they kept everybody, and I don't know if they'll be able to keep Neves moving forward or a couple of the others either. But I mean, actually, I'd love to see Neves come over to United at some point, maybe.
Yeah, that would be, we could certainly use midfield.
Yeah, that would be pretty exciting. I wouldn't say no to that. But I'm pretty optimistic about the game Monday. Unfortunately, I'm going to miss it because it's Monday. But
in the States, it's going to be at 2 p.m., so yeah. A lot of us will still be at work. Yeah. Not me, though. I'll be watching.
There you go. I mean, I'm going to watch it after the fact, and I expect it to go pretty well, but I think that we're going to get two very different samples of our season from this and the Chelsea game, because I think that this team is much more cohesive than Chelsea when we played them. This team has more talent, really, on paper than Chelsea does, and so I think we're gonna have a different test here with Wolves than we have with Chelsea.
One thing about Chelsea as well that's worth noting is that while they maybe don't gel as well together yet, and they haven't really developed that much chemistry, they did come out with the same sort of, you know, Chelsea-minded tactics of wanting to attack and create a lot of chances. I'm not sure we'll really see that from Wolves. They may let us, you know, be on the ball a lot more. I expect us to dominate the possession, and that's, you know, what they want. That's what they want to play teams into, so they can hit us on the break.
Yeah, last year Wolves.
But also, they could dominate possession just because their midfield is so much better than ours.
Yeah, very true. That's a big variable. I think actually last year Wolves were better against teams that had more possession. Like so, the bigger the possession difference was, the better they were. And even against Leicester, you saw Leicester had 70% of the possession. I mean, that was not a good outing by Wolves necessarily, but
they did. I mean, they scored a goal that was ruled out by VAR that probably would have given them a game. But
yeah, for sure. And I mean, that's the way they want to play, so we may see that. I don't know how well we're equipped to take advantage of that right now in midfield, but we'll have to see, I guess. I'd like to see Fred in the squad, just to his quickness, his speed. I think he's a fairly good passer. I also want him to pan out, because we did spend a decent amount of money on him.
Yeah, and we need midfielders.
And we need midfielders.
He's worth a shot. Yeah. I've obviously want Paul Pogba to play in a more advanced role. Yeah. I've kind of said that throughout the history of this podcast, but maybe it is for the best for the time being that he's in one of those midfield two roles alongside McTominay, because when it comes to possessing and creating chances, those are probably our two best shots at it.
Oh yeah, for sure.
You know, that was a problem against Wolves last season. We just didn't really create a whole lot of chances.
And we've seen consistently that Pogba can still facilitate from back there. Like, he doesn't have to be the 10 to facilitate, because he has the ability to make, like, passes, accurate passes, like, two-thirds the length of the pitch. So I think he can serve multiple roles back there. I do think, ultimately, he's happier playing the 10. And we may look better the 10, but I think right now he's probably best where he is until we can get some more cohesiveness in that midfield.
Yeah, one of the big faults of the transfer window, not addressing the absence or the departure of Ander Herrera. And of course, Nemanja Matic, not the player he used to be anymore either. Going forward, though, I think we definitely have the advantage. I think Marcus Rashford and Martial both have to be in, you know, good confidence going into this game. Daniel James could be really effective off the bench again, or maybe he'll start. Jesse Lingard, I'm not sure I would want to start him, maybe just because he did give the ball away a lot against Chelsea, and he looked kind of lost at points in the match.
And he's not particularly good at possession. So if you're trying to take care of that, like take advantage of that tendency of Wolves to give possession away, like he's not the guy we want.
But yeah.
I do like Lingard in general.
Yeah, I just think he's more effective. Matt and I have talked about this. He seems more effective off the bench.
Yeah, I mean, he's a counterpuncher and he's a presser. So if you're playing teams that you really want to press, but that's not Wolves, because Wolves aren't going to have the ball enough to press.
If we do let them possess the ball and Lingard's on the pitch, though, I think having those three pressing that back three they usually play with.
That
would be really interesting to see. Of course, Willy Bolly will probably boss it physically against these guys. I guess one thing Lukaku did have was that size and strength. As well as attacking awareness and positioning. But I don't know. Maybe Rashford and Martial's speed will hit him at some point. It's really hard to predict this game because, one, we don't really know yet if Wolves are as good as they were last season or if they're going to maintain that. And two, we've only had one match of watching Manchester United, and we don't really know how they're going to play against a team like Wolves yet.
Very true. Very true. Very limited sample. And not necessarily a great litmus test.
No.
So we'll have to wait and see.
But do you have a score prediction in mind, Phil?
I'm going to be optimistic, actually, because that first game, it's got me feeling really good. 3-1.
3-1. I had 2-1 on my NBC Sports Premier League predictor. Okay. It's the reverse scoreline of what they beat us by twice last season at the Molineux. But it seems like maybe this... or maybe this is just me being hopeful, but it seems like this United team is cut from a different cloth than the one last year. It seems like they're more prepared for what Ole is trying to do with them. They're definitely in better shape, and it's at the beginning of the season. Yeah. So
they seem really confident, too, which I think is huge. Like,
there's no injuries. There's no fatigue yet. We'll just have to see, though.
Yeah, and I think a lot of it will depend on how many of the regular starters Wolves start in that second leg against Pajunic. Definitely mispronounced that. But so if they rest some of their bigger players and they're more ready to go, I think we'll have a better test. But if Neves and Jimenez and Jota are all playing, I think they'll be pretty tired. That's a lot of wear and tear early in the season.
And regardless, I think they'd probably have to play at least half their first team.
Yeah.
And that just have players that won't roll over in that game. But, with that in mind, that's still 90 minutes of football that you have to play in the week that Manchester United get 8 days of rest with.
Yeah.
So, we'll see how that goes on Monday. And I've been Colin. This is Phil. Phil will be joining me a bit more frequently now. If you remember the last couple episodes, Matt and I talked about I recently moved and relocated. But I've got Phil, and of course Matt will also join us occasionally through Skype, or he'll actually be in town this Friday. So we'll see if we can get an episode recorded then. And
it was really all an elaborate plan to get rid of Matt. That's really what the whole thing was.
Yeah, I moved to a different city. And, yeah. Thanks for tuning in. Be sure to check out the Busby Babe on SB Nation for all your Manchester United news and needs. And subscribe to the Busby Babe podcast. Give us a like, share, comment, whatever. You can find us on Apple, Spotify, Stitcher, pretty much wherever you get your podcasts. We're also on Podcoin now.
Oh, wow. Getting big, blowing up. Hell yeah.
Gonna get a big head.
Right?
All right. I've been Colin.
I've been Philip.
And thanks for tuning in. We'll see you next time.